Today's section is on the WorkSafe Victoria, a scheme update presented by Tien Chen and Julie Evans. Chen is an actuary and is currently the acting manager actuarial at WorkSafe Victoria. Chen has over 20 years' experience in actuarial and financial modelling, spanning both the banking and insurance sectors. Whilst at WorkSafe for the last 7 years, Chen has focused on lump sum benefits, impairment benefits in common law, and treatment costs. Prior to joining WorkSafe, Chen spent over 10 years in the banking and finance sector, specialising in corporate and structured finance. Julie Evans, I'm sure you all have known Julie. She's been in the industry a long time. she's been at WorkSafe... and she can sing. She's been at WorkSafe for almost 10 years, following many more years than that as an actuarial consultant both in Australia and overseas. She is the Value Delivery Lead for the Strategy 2030 Transformation Program, having previously worked in the Scheme Performance Division. Julie has long been fascinated by the dynamics of injury compensation schemes and her involvement in the development and delivery of WorkSafe's long-term strategy provides the opportunity to help shape and deliver a future in which these dynamics are leveraged to produce greater financial, economic and social value for all Victorians. So I'll hand over to Chen.
Which one do I press?
All right. That one.
Okay, this is what we're going to talk about today. I will cover where we are today and Julie will talk about the changing environment and where we're going, which is the Strategy 2030. Okay, when I talk about where we are today, just for a bit of context, we've just concluded a five-year strategy called Strategy 2017. It finished this year. So when I talk about where we are today, I'm going to go through the lens of these five categories. These are the things that underpin our previous strategy. So they are safety, service, return to work, sustainability, culture in place. So those categories are pretty self-explanatory, except maybe culture in place, that's just the way we refer to kind of our people, you know, that we remain engaged through a period of change. So that's just our way of talking about ourselves, really. Yeah. Okay, so I'll just run through those where we are today according to those five key pieces. This just gives some highlights from about our highlights from the last 5 years as we concluded our Strategy 17. You might have heard Claire said we've had a 22% reduction in our claims per million hours worked. So that's the largest reduction on record. We've also had an improved return to work rate. Not by much, but it was an improvement. And be fair to say that's been impacted by mental injury. So the rise in mental injury in the workplace has certainly added complexities in people returning to work. WorkSafe remains financially sound. We've got a very strong balance sheet, and we continue to be highly rated by our injured workers and by employers. We concluded Strategy 17 with 16-17 being our safest year on record. Okay, so that's the kind of the overview, and then I'll just delve into each of the five categories. Okay, safety. When we talk about safety, the way we measure safety, it's using claims per million hours work, which is our headline measure. We also measure safety according to the four-week claims per million hours work. The 4 weeks just refer to the 4 weeks duration. So the 4 weeks does indicate a level of severity and complexity versus just a claims per million hours work. So, okay. Charts. Now, the left-hand charts, left-hand chart is the claim per million hours work, and the right-hand chart is the 4 week claims per million hours work. You can see there the left-hand chart. We've seen, you know, that's a 22% reduction over the 5 years that I mentioned before. So seen a very strong improvement in the claims per million hours worked. When you look at the 4 week claims, it's you know, it's still an improvement. It's an 8% reduction from the, you know, from June 12 to June 17. But obviously, it's not at the same level as the claims per million hours worked. Right. So, notwithstanding the good trends that I just showed you in the previous slide, we are seeing a couple of, I would like to highlight a couple of safety challenges. One relates to mental injury, the other is occupational violence and aggression in the workplace. Certainly our data is suggesting that, you know, we are seeing more mental injury claims, and we're seeing more claims involving occupational violence and aggression. Our data is suggesting that, you know, that's more prevalent in some occupations and industries than others. For example, a healthcare worker would be twice as likely to lodge a mental injury claim, and it's twice as likely to lodge a claim involving occupational violence and aggression. Okay. Return to work. Now, the way we measure return to work is the percentage of claims with 10 days of time loss reported over a 12-month period that are back at work 6 months after lodgement. So it's a bit of a mouthful. So we count the number of claims reported over a 12-month period. These are claims that have had 10 days worth of time loss. And then we go, are these claims back at work 6 months after lodgement? What's the proportion? So, okay. Right, so the orange line, the middle line, is the return to work rate for all claims. We ended the 5-year at June 17 at 78.5%. We started at 78%, so it's kind of improved a little bit. So, but you know, not a hell of a lot. But when you look at the physical injury line, it started from 80% and reached up to 81.8%. So it's actually a pretty good improvement in terms of the physical claims. But the mental injury claims, that started off at 60% return to work rate 5 years ago, and that's deteriorated and it's now at 54.5%. So it wasn't great to start with. It's saying, you know, 5 years ago, 60% of mental injury claims were returned to work 6 months after lodgement, but that's now at 54.5%. So that's really impacting the ability, you know, why the orange line isn't following the physical claims up. So it's really the deterioration in the rates for the mental injury claims, but also that the mix of claims, you know, the mix of mental injury claims are higher. So those two factors are basically offsetting the good return to work rates in the of the physical injury line. Sustainability. So sustainability is really the financials. Are we financially sound? So when we talk about sustainability, we're talking about things like actuarial release, break-even premium, PFIO, which stands for performance from insurance operations, and the funding ratio, which is assets over liabilities. So according to those metrics, our last year, 16-17, we had an actuarial increase of $169 million. Break-even premium at 1.262% of REM, that's still below what we charge on average, just below. PFIO of $233 million, we're pretty profitable, and also the funding ratio of 119%. So we've got a strong balance sheet. We can cover, you know, for every dollar of liability, we've got $1.19 of assets to cover that liability. So, but we are seeing key challenges. I've already mentioned we're seeing an increasing mix of mental injury claims, but we're also seeing more workers remaining on weekly benefits for longer. That's just for both mental injury claims and physical injury claims. Okay. This is a chart of actuarial releases over time. The green bars pointing up is an actuarial release per, according to years, and the red bars pointing down is an actuarial increase. In the previous slide, I mentioned that we had a $169 million actuarial increase. So this just gives you some context as to where, you know, what that number really means. As you can see, that we've had a long history of actuarial releases. If I was to push that chart back even more years, you know, you'll continue to see green bars extending all the way back to probably the late 90s when we had really large actuarial increases. So we've come through a history of, you know, strong actuarial releases. But when you look at the last three bars there, they're, you know, three red bars pointing downwards. I think when Julie presented 2 years ago in Adelaide, you know, we've just had the 60 mil hit at, actuarial increase, for 14-15. And at the time, you know, we had a 60 mil actuarial increase. You know, is it the start of something? Is it noise? Not sure. But I guess 2 years on, we've had, you know, 3 years of actuarial increases, each one larger than the previous one. Okay. Now, since we're at an actuarial conference, I thought I'd show you a chart by accident here. Now, what that chart is each of those lines represent a particular accident year or injury year. The x-axis is the delay since the start of that injury year. So it's just development months. And what we're counting there are the count of active claims. So for this purpose, an active claim is a claim that's in receipt of a weekly payment. So what's interesting about that chart is that you can see for a lot of the injury years, they, you know, as we go through it, as it matures, they all kind of end up lying on top of each other. That's saying the number of active claims for those older injuries, they all kind of line up, they all kind of behave similarly to each other. But look at what's happened with the last three lines that are sort of increasing upwards. So the purple line, that's the 14-15 injury year. That's higher than that bunching up of those prior years. So that's really saying mental injury claims, as we get to the more recent injury years, we're seeing more of them. And so the purple line sort of lifted off the bunching of the older injury years. And then look at the next one along, the 15-16 injury year. That's the light blue line. So that's higher again. And then lastly, look at the 16-17 injury year, the orange line. That's higher again. So you know, it is a pretty marked change from historical trends. So, all right. Over to service. Just to explain what the percentages are that relate to these bars. These are essentially survey results. So in terms of service, we survey employers, we survey injured workers, and we also survey the community. So we ask some questions about, you know, how we're performing in regards to our service delivery. So basically, if you get 100%, it means that they've responded positively on every single question on that survey. But, of course, no one gets 100%. But, you know, when you look at the employer service and the worker service, they're pretty high. The employer service is at 90%, worker service at 88%. So they're pretty good. Where we're seeing challenges is in community service. So that's down at, we ended up at 16-17 at 70.5%. So not only is it, you know, not high, it's also declined from the previous year at 71.6%. Lastly, culture and place. Again, I mentioned before, this is about ourselves, how we're tracking. So we at WorkSafe, we're passionate about our vision, which is Victorian workers returning home safe every day. So this is what we're passionate about, what we're wanting to deliver. But we ourselves are undergoing significant change. We're relocating to Geelong. You know, we're doing it in tranches, we've got a large group now. So we've got a move date of June 18, and the ones that are now in Melbourne, we're going through significant decision-making time. So, you know, we're going through a period of change. So not only there's a not only are we, thinking about the Geelong relocation, we're also undergoing a fairly large strategic change, which is Strategy 2030. So that it's no surprise that, in terms of our employee opinion survey scores, that's sort of tracking down a little bit. So that just gives a quick snap overview of where we're at. I will hand over to Julie to talk about challenges and the future, which is Strategy 2030.
Thanks, Tien. So Tien has spoken about some of the changes we've seen from the perspective of the scheme experience, and I just wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the other changes that are emerging or on the horizon that we've picked up in our scan ahead of developing our next long-term strategy, Strategy 2030. We come up with imaginative names. We had Strategy 2017. We now have Strategy 2030. In formulating our strategy, we've looked at the external environment, all sorts of forecasts and scenarios, our research. We've got a great body of research that we've collected over the years. We've looked at leading practice in equivalent and adjacent industries. We've also spoken with our stakeholders and our clients. Now, the plenaries this morning spoke a fair bit about this sort of stuff, so I won't labour it here. We'll endeavour to leave plenty of time for questions. And so I would encourage you to ask questions if there's anything that I sort of gloss over here. So as we spoke about this morning, the nature of work is changing. There's nothing new or surprising about that. And just listed on the screen a couple of those areas. So for those of you listening at home after the event, these sessions are recorded, you'll need to open the slide pack and have a look. But we know that... As I said, the nature of work is changing. Jobs are increasingly mobile. People have more than one employer. They have more than one workplace. They will hold multiple careers over their lifetime, which has implications for the sorts of hazards they face and them building up their own safety culture. As you change careers, you come into contact with a whole new bunch of risks. Technology is changing. There are new tools available to us, new hazards that confront us. So we need to be able to reach, we as WorkSafe need to be able to reach a whole bunch of employers and workers who are working in something other than the traditional one employer, one worker environment. We need to hit them with the right products and services at the right time, and we also need to be accessible to them in the form that makes sense to them. We've looked at all sorts of trends and predictions. We've had people come in and do some of this work for us. There's strong economic growth in Victoria, and the forecasts are for that to continue. We will see continued growth in the population, the number of the size of the working population, the number of employers, the growth in small business and micro business. And whilst our safety performance has been strong, as Tien has already alluded to, there are certainly scenarios that we can formulate that include claims growth, and particularly in the area of mental injury. Tien mentioned also service industries. You'll be familiar with stats for exposure to occupational violence of health workers in particular. The sorts of stats you see there will say that over a period of 1 or 2 years, almost everybody working in that field will have had some exposure, either themselves or to someone working very closely with them, to some form of occupational violence. Now, much of it doesn't translate to our claim stats. It's not so much a sort of an economic issue for our scheme, but it is a huge safety issue for the workforce, and it plays out on people's mental health. We're also seeing demographic changes, of course. As we know, we've been talking about the ageing population for years, but we also have an ageing population that will work for longer, and that too brings with it new risks, but also new opportunities. Community expectations. We spoke a lot about that this morning. We've looked at research and spoken with employers, workers, including as part of focus groups, surveys and design thinking workshops. We know, and our chief executive said this morning, that we don't always meet their expectations. And furthermore, we know that the community's expectations are changing and they will continue to change over time. So for us at WorkSafe, we need to catch up. We need to get to and then stay ahead of those changing expectations. And that's led us to the development of Strategy 2030. To answer the unasked, or as a yet unasked question, why 2030? And I'm at pains to say it's not because it's going to take us that long to transform the business in the way we want to, but more because it takes us out beyond that period of time that you can sort of clearly envision in your brain. It takes us beyond the bit that we can sort of foresee and forecast into an area where we just know there will be significant change, but we don't quite know what it looks like. So rather than design a solution that is based on a particular view of the future, what we're trying to do is embed in our business an approach to problem solving and an approach to staying on top of emerging challenges, adapting, getting ahead of the curve, a way of work that responds not so much to what we expect to see, but how we do what we do. We know that the future will raise all sorts of new challenges that we can't possibly think about. The technology that we will have available in 2030, I've got no idea what that's going to look at. If I look back 2 or 3 years, I had no idea the phone I would use would be able to do the sorts of things my phone can do now. So that's the 2030 frame. It's to try and get our brains out of the way where you're just thinking, this is what I can see in front of me, this is how I'm going to solve it, to how am I going to be able to solve the sorts of problems and issues that emerge over time. So working with the sources of information I spoke about before, the sort of leading practice research, discussions with our stakeholders and our clients, we've developed these 7 key themes for Strategy 2030. And Claire spoke about the prevention-led plank of this morning, and many of the other speakers spoke about being focused on the needs of workers and employers, that client-centric approach. So there's, I suppose, sort of the 2 key outcome themes. If we get it right, then we are an organisation which is prevention-led, which is focused on the needs of workers and employers. The 4 below that are sort of those things that help bring about those outcomes. We'll simplify our business. I don't know how many times we've been told we make things hellishly complicated. In fact, we spoke with an injured worker, I remember, who, to his credit, was prepared to stand in front of 50 of our senior leaders and tell us about a shocking experience, really, with our scheme. And he said, "You make the scheme so complex so that you can just trip me up at every move I make." So simplifying our business is a key means of establishing this prevention-led and focused on the needs of workers and employers scheme. Leading the way and adapting quickly, and Claire spoke about that this morning. Offering tailored products and services, not designed by us in a way that is easiest for us to deliver, but designed with the view of the client as front of mind. And sharing goals and outcomes with the community. And this is the important plank of success in being a prevention-led organisation, which is to have community ownership of the safety message. And underpinning all of this is the 7th theme, which is the collection and effective use of data and predictive analytics. We've got a great data store. We've got every claim that was ever lodged on the business since 1985, well over 1 million records. We've got every visit that inspectors have undertaken. But we can't always join it up. We can't always use it easily. I think we will build the capacity to build a really deep evidence base to make really good evidence-based decisions. Oops, I went the wrong way. The prevention-led transformation, and Claire showed a variation of this slide this morning. This broad, deep cultural shift, that win-win, if you like, where the community just knows that prevention is key to success. So I mentioned earlier we've sort of got a key transformation period. Well, maybe I didn't. I was going to. I forgot. Of about 5 to 6 years. We'll be looking at about a key 6-year transformation period. This one is on the longer term agenda. We know this one will take time. You don't build a community action and a community culture quickly. So this is perhaps the longest plan in in part the more difficult part of our transformation. We don't underestimate the size of the challenge, but we see tremendous value here. I'll get the right arrow shortly. I think it's because I'm left-handed. I think the world must look the wrong way to me. To sort of keep our stakeholders engaged along the way, recognising that it will take us a while to undergo our transformation, we are looking at key things that we can deliver over the next year or two. The website redevelopment is part of that. We've got a website that has fantastic information on it, but it is very, very difficult to navigate. By June 18, we will launch our new website, a new digital platform that will enable all sorts of capability that we currently can't deliver using our existing website. We won't be able to turn on all of that capability immediately. It will require some other fundamental tech change, but we're building for the future. Guidance material, we have over 950 pieces of guidance material on our website, some of it 100 pages long. There's a big program to review that, make sure it's contemporary, make sure it's user-friendly, not built so much about compliance, but built to be useful. The data and analytics capability we're building now. Shortly we'll award a contract to some external providers to help us do that. And an innovation centre, we've got another bunch of contractors on to assist with us changing the way we look at how we develop solutions to problems. And there are others, but these are sort of the four that perhaps are top of mind. We've also done some really deep dive into process, which doesn't sound terribly exciting, but it's the first time that WorkSafe has been able to form a joined-up view of process end-to-end across our business in the 30 years that we've been in operation. We've built, this is the process of the future. We know it won't stay this way. We'll modify it as time goes on, as we try things and realise that there are better ways to do things or someone else does it better and we can copy it. But we've built an end-to-end process, over 3,000 processes at level 3 and 4, and joined up data flows as well. Again, built the data flows of the future, what they will look like. Timeline, just in really high level, there are sort of three horizons. This immediate one over the next 2 years, as we build and deliver those early opportunities, get stuck into establishing the enabling capabilities, in particular the data and analytics and the innovation capabilities, and do the real grunt work on the business and technology design. Over the following couple of years, we'll start to mature those enabling capabilities and deliver some of the initial transformation packages. So we've broken a whole bunch of key deliverables, I suppose, over that period into smaller transformation packages. For example, licensing. We do an extraordinary amount of licensing of high-risk work, for example. There's a transformation package for licensing. So initial transformation packages will be delivered over that time period with the rest the following years. And under all of this, of course, is a period of change management and cultural change within our organisation, working with our stakeholders and engaging our stakeholders and our clients, and, of course, building a program of community co-ownership of safety. And that is that, which brings us to questions, I think, Bruce.
Hi, I'm Justin Toe from Quantium. I spend a lot of my time on health and work with private health insurers, and I think they've seen some of the same trends in mental health experience as you have. There's a hypothesis there that underlying cause is, I guess it's supplier-induced demand by mental health facilities and increase in beds. I was just wondering, have you looked into this? Is this something you can either confirm or refute? And are there opportunities, I guess, to work with them in terms of controlling this phenomenon?
Do you want to answer that one? Because you... Or not.
thank you for your question. As to whether it's supply-induced demand, I'm not sure. But the stats I presented, they relate to what we call primary mental injury claims. So these are claims where in the claim form they actually wrote down, yep, it's a mental injury claim. Now, some of the... my read of it is part of the reason why we're seeing more of it in the more recent injury years is it could be that for the older injury years, those claims were primary mental injury claims, but they're not recorded as primary mental injury. People might want to just say, oh, yep, I've got a physical claim, but in fact, they're really suffering from mental injury. Maybe some of it's a classification thing, but certainly, you know, given that society's changing, there's a bit more acceptance of a mental injury claim. There's more acceptance of asking for help. So maybe, you know, some of it is people putting their hand up and say, I need help. I'm okay to say it's a primary mental injury claim. And of course, you know, in a treatment world, there's always supply-induced demand. There's always, you know, medical, you know, providers, I use the word providers, wanting to, you know, their business model is to service, you know, provide medical service and earn revenue that way. So there's always, of course, an element of that. But I do think that it is a change in our environment, change in our society.
Other questions?
Hi, thanks for the presentation. You mentioned in the slides about financial viability that it's quite stable, but the Strategy 2030 document suggested that common law was challenging the viability of the scheme. Can you shed some light on what you're doing specifically on common law?
I guess the common law being a risk factor for us is really about common law lodgements. Like we do see, lodgement volumes increasing year on year, but although it's sort of flattened a little bit for 16-17. In terms of what we're doing about it, I can mention that there's a common law working group comprising of different stakeholders. It's not just WorkSafe. It's chaired by an independent chair. There's representatives from plaintiff lawyers, from panel firms, from agents, from the medical community. So this group convenes and it considers what's the trends, what can be done, you know, what, you know, it even discusses things like benefit levels and that sort of thing. But I can't really talk about the recommendations they've made yet, but you know, suffice to say there's a working group with all the interested stakeholders that convene to discuss trends in or adverse trends in common law.
Other questions?
Sorry, just a quick one. You had a slide up earlier in and around worker satisfaction, employer satisfaction and community satisfaction. I was just interested in the community arm of that and who you're surveying and when.
Now, the survey for the community, obviously, with employer and worker surveys, we would, like say with an injured worker, we'll survey a worker that's actually been through a claim process with an employer, you know, people that pay our premium. So they've actually been through an event or have a direct interaction with us. With the community, it's just a sample in the community. They may not have actually dealt with us directly. It's their perception of the effectiveness of what we do. So we'll, you know, do it. I'm not been through the survey myself, but there's others in the organisation that do it. But they would, you know, ask the community about, you know, whether we've been effective in that, you know, in the things that we do with enforcement, with do we get the balance between enforcement and education right? You know, do we think that the workplace will get an inspector visit in the next 12 months? What's their expectation? So it's a perception type of survey. As to the frequency, I can't answer that, but it's probably, you know, around, it'll be regularly, it'll be like monthly or quarterly, it'll be of that ilk. Yeah.
Any other questions? I've got two if I could. You suggested that psychological injury is, the number of claims and the return to work rates have been deteriorating. Is there part of your strategy looking at how to address that? Is that something that's been taken on board and you've got?
It's a very significant part of what we're looking at. And I think one of the things we've, through looking at where we're at and the sorts of the work we do in prevention, for example, we have a field force of inspectors who conduct 40,000 visits a year. It's very much easier for them, I suppose, to spot physical hazards than it is to spot hazards to mental injury. So I think one of the things that's taken us down this path of having a prevention-led transformation where we seek community co-ownership of the problem is that mental injury is bigger than an individual workplace or a machine or a physical hazard. It's the environment, it's how people are, how willing they are to put up their hand to ask for help, how much support the community provides for them when they do that. I was in a presentation the other day. We had a health and safety month running in Victoria, and on the final day of that there was big seminars in Melbourne, and one of the speakers was talking about young workers, and a question from the audience afterwards was really a statement. He said, young workers are soft, they just need to get over it, we've all been there, we all just had to get over it. And I think it's that sort of fundamental, what we need to shift is that attitude that says toughen up, and just, you can get early intervention, you can get better services directed to the problem if people are prepared to raise their hand and if people around them are prepared to support them. Okay. So I don't know if that's really answered your question, Bruce, but it is a key focus of what we're doing, is looking at how can you help people where the injury, if you like, is perhaps not quite so apparent. You don't necessarily see it. They don't just think someone can quickly fix it. How do you get into a position of trust where people are prepared to talk to you about it, so that you can help them?
That's been good. We've got time for one or two last questions. Can I ask another question then? As an actuary, sorry this is coming out, but big data, to me that's an exciting opportunity, and I noticed in your 2030 strategy, data and data analytics, and you're planning to partner with a firm. And it's also very difficult to see where the world of big data is actually going to go. Have you got any insights or visions of what that might look like by 2030? I know that's a very vague question.
Well, by 2030, no. So that's easy. I think, as everyone was talking about this morning, a key to really directing spend to where it is most needed is to automate process where it is not. Mm-hmm. And certainly I think in the early stages of what we do, our focus on use of data and analytics will be to be able to straight through process and to be able to deliver products and services to people in a tailored fashion, but to do so using data and analytics to drive that rather than individuals, people sitting down making decisions about each and every one. It will release value from our business. The trapped value, what we're referring to as trapped value in our business, is substantial. But by releasing that, by using data and analytics to automate some decision-making where that's able to be done in a safe way, we can redirect that to prevention. So you sort of get the win-win.
Okay.
In the end. A simpler, smoother process and a stronger investment where it's most needed.
I'll hand it back. Is there any last questions? At that point then, I'd just like to thank our presenters, Chen and Julie. I think that was a fabulous presentation on a wonderful scheme. And if I could... Well, I was going to ask about actuarial release if we went back further in time, but I won't. If I could hand it all over to you to thank our presenters in the usual way.